This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2014, held at Faith Builders, August 5 through 8.
My background is in construction. I even have the scars and missing digits to prove it. But it's interesting to me how God leads and directs us into areas of life that we never dreamed of. I always assumed that I would continue to work at constructing buildings. I was happy doing what I was doing, but I had no idea that I would soon voluntarily quit my life as a builder. Soon after Wade was born, we found a local Down syndrome support group and started attending meetings. And not too long after that, Karen and I were asked to take over as directors of this group, which we are still doing today. In meeting with other families that have youth and young adults with Down syndrome, we discovered a common concern or problem for these families was finding meaningful jobs for these individuals as they got older. We also started thinking about our own son, Wade. What would he be able to do when he got older? Well, before long, an opportunity presented itself. And after much consideration, I laid aside my builder's license and I went to school. I went to Better Process Control School. And I'm curious, is there anyone here besides me that has a diploma from Better Process Control School? Oh, that makes me feel good about myself. I didn't really expect to find anyone. Better Process Control School has to do with processing food products safely. Karen and I now own and operate Woodside Kitchen. We produce bottled sauces and dressings. And you may have even seen some of our products up here. Some stores, interestingly enough, we sell more of our products here in Pennsylvania and Ohio than we do in our home state of Georgia. But our goal when we started this business was to not only provide meaningful work for our sons, and especially for Wade when he gets older, but our dream was that someday we would grow and be able to provide employment for some of our other friends in the Down syndrome community. And we are very happy that we have already been able to make that a reality. This is Nathan. He's 21 years old, and he places neck bands on the bottles as they go past, and he really enjoys his job. He and Wade also load empty bottles onto the turntable. They put the finished product into boxes. And here Nathan is teaching Wade how to put labels on the boxes. And I got to ask you, do you bring this much joy to your jobs? Nathan even convinced us to give his girlfriend a trial also. Here's Caitlin and Nathan both working together. Nathan and Caitlin both have Down syndrome. They love each other very much and they want to get married. And both of their parents are supportive, and I think someday it likely will happen. That's one wedding I want to be at. But I wish I could convey to you somehow the joy that Wade and Nathan, Caitlin, and others like them bring to everyone around them. You know what it's like to have a bad day, to find no joy in repeating the same mundane task over again. You know what it's like to have coworkers come to work who are out of sorts, feeling grumpy. Well, not only does Nathan and Wade never exhibit any of this grumpiness, but it's impossible for you to feel that way when you're around them. They bring a joy of living that somehow the rest of us manage to repress or lose way too often. And that reminds me of a story of another young man with Down syndrome that I read about recently. His school teacher assigned the class an assignment to write an essay detailing their worst day ever. And when he struggled with getting started, his teacher assumed that Mark was just trying to avoid the work, but not so. As Mark explained, he said, "I don't know what to write. I've never had a bad day." Now, I know that every parent is proud of their own children, and I'm no exception. And I'm sure we've all groaned a little bit when people pull out their photo albums. But please bear with me. I want to show you just a few more pictures of Wade. I want to go back to my opening statement that we are more alike than different. Wade might have Down syndrome, and yes, along with that comes some characteristics that do make him somewhat different. But let me assure you that first and foremost, he is all boy. Back in February of this year, the Southeast had a devastating ice storm and lots of damage, lots of trees down. This was taken a few days later after the ice had melted. But we looked out. Wade loves his yellow boots, but you can see he discarded them here. So my wife grabbed the camera and she took a few photos. I wish I could show these to his previous physical therapist when she was working with him when he was younger. I remember one of the statements that she made when she was working with him so hard to be able to stand on one leg and to be able to hop and trying to teach him to jump. She said, "He'll be able to jump, but he'll never enjoy it. He would jump all day long if you let him." Now, this was in February. That water was about 45 degrees. You couldn't have paid me to sit there with my feet in it. But it didn't stop him. So almost 8 years ago, when Wade was born, and we found out that he had Down syndrome, we were surprised. We weren't expecting it. We were stunned. We were shocked. And we were scared. But as life moved on, there was another surprise. Prior to life with Wade, I would have said that having a child with Down syndrome would be devastating. And yes, he has turned our world upside down. But the surprise for me has been that this changing of our world has not been negative at all. Rather, it has been the most wonderful gift we could have been given. Wade and others like him that I've learned to know have made a dramatic change in how I view other people. People that I once classified as being different. We use this label different to describe people who have physical challenges, people with different skin color, people with varying mental capabilities, and on and on. Somehow anybody who is not just like us we label as different. And I'd like to share with you some of the ways that my life with Wade has made me more aware of my need in my own life to be more compassionate to all people, and especially toward those whom society has deemed as different. Karen Armstrong is a lady who has dedicated her life to the study of religion. She's written numerous books on the world's faiths. She wrote a best-selling History of God, and her examination of the commonalities of the world's faiths has brought her to her current project that she calls the Charter for Compassion. She said, and I quote, "My work has continually brought me back to the notion of compassion. Whichever religious tradition I study, I find at the heart of it is the idea of feeling with the other, experiencing with the other, compassion. And every single one of the major world religions has developed its own version of the golden rule. Don't do to others what you would not like them to do to you." She goes on to say, "We've got to do better than this. Compassion doesn't mean feeling sorry for people. It doesn't mean pity. It means putting yourself in the position of the other, learning about the other, learning what motivates the other, and learning about their grievances." End quote. What is compassion? Well, first and foremost, it is simply kindness. It really is just that simple, kindness. How can you truly have compassion for someone if you don't know what they are experiencing? One of the best ways is to use something that God has given to each of us. Some of us have more than others. And that thing is imagination. Albert Einstein is known for having said, "Imagination is more important than knowledge." Now, if you think about that statement for a little bit, I'm not sure if you agree with it or not, but he goes on to explain, "For while knowledge defines all that we currently know and understand, imagination points to all that we might yet discover and create." In this room full of educators, I feel quite certain that you have all taught your students there are only 26 letters in the English alphabet. But Dr. Seuss knew better. In this classic work of literature, one of his characters said, "My alphabet starts with this letter called Yuz. It's the letter I use to spell Yuzumatuz. You'll be sort of surprised what there is to be found once you go beyond Z and start poking around." So I used to be very comfortable in my life and my experiences all the way from A to Z. But all of a sudden, when Wade was diagnosed with Down syndrome, I found myself thrust into a new world, in new territory. And like Dr. Seuss said, I was surprised by what I found when I went beyond Z and started poking around. What we can easily see is only a small percentage of what is possible. Imagination is having the vision to be able to see what is just below the surface, to picture that which is essential, even though it's invisible to the eye. So often we allow our perception of reality to be colored by just what we can see. With our eyes, we often see just what is on the surface, and as a result, it is easy for us to misjudge or dismiss as inconsequential things that may have much more meaning or value than what we realize. It's so easy to go through life and just see things through our own very narrow, limited point of view. But we need to remember that others may see things differently than us. They may have a different viewpoint. We know that men and women have different perceptions. Builders and farmers do. Perhaps at times school teachers and school board members. What do you see when you look at this picture? Do you see the older lady with a big nose and a pointed chin? Or do you see the younger lady with a smaller profile looking away from you? There's her eyelid, her nose, her chin and jawline, and her neck. Or the old lady looking toward you with her eye, nose, and mouth. So we can all look at the same thing, yet come away having seen something completely different. Once there was a lady who was attending a concert, and while she was thinking how these men were all dressed exactly alike, her young son leaned over and said, "Look, Mom, they all have different heads." So while she was seeing the similarities, her son was seeing something completely different. He was noticing their different heads. How can we expand our horizons, see the world as other people see it, experience what life would be like for someone else? Well, people have tried different ways to open their eyes and experience life as someone else. It is said that one cannot understand or empathize with someone else unless you walk a mile in their shoes. John Howard Griffin did just that by asking a very poignant question. If a white man became a Negro in the Deep South, what adjustments would he have to make? And to answer this question, in 1959, he shaved his head and had his skin darkened through medical treatments and stain. And he traveled through parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia to find out what it would be like as a black man. He wanted to see how it would feel to be a member of a despised minority, during the height of the Jim Crow years, when water fountains and restrooms were separate for the races, when a black man or woman couldn't eat in a restaurant or find a motel room. And it was only by becoming black that Griffin was able to understand what it was like to live as a second-class citizen. Now today, even in this enlightened age that we live in, I wonder what a similar experiment would show us about racial conditions today. I found this book to be very eye-opening and a vivid reminder of a very dark part of our nation's history. Another book that I have enjoyed is Disguised by Pat Moore. For a period of several years, she traveled throughout the U.S. and Canada, disguised as women more than 80 years of age. She wanted to find out what elderly people face, what they have to deal with. And she not only altered her appearance so that she appeared elderly, she used physical props. As I recall, she put drops in her eyes to cloud her vision. She wrapped tape and cloth around her elbows and knees to simulate stiff joints and other things. And she was very surprised at what she found out. And if you can find a copy of this book and read it, it too will change the way you look at elderly people. It will help you understand some of the things they might be going through. And maybe you'll be able to identify with them and cut them some slack on those days when you feel that they are just being a little too crotchety. And I also once saw a video of a school class who had one student in a wheelchair. And after observing the class for a while, the teacher noticed how the other students ignored this boy. She decreed that from now on, all of the students would spend at least 3 hours every day in wheelchairs. No doubt that their eyes and minds were opened, and they probably never looked at people in wheelchairs the same again. Another book that I like, more recent, is this one, Same Kind of Different as Me, written by Ron Hall and Denver Moore. It tells the unlikely story of the unlikeliest of friends, a wealthy white art dealer and a dangerous homeless drifter. I strongly recommend this book. Write it down, get it from the library. I'd like you to read this book. So these are some examples of people who went to perhaps extreme measures in their desire to understand what life was like for someone else. You can devise your own experiment. If you know someone who is deaf or really hard of hearing, you could go for a day or several days or a week with really good set of earplugs in your ears to see what it would be like. My grandmother lived most of her life totally deaf, and so I felt like I have a pretty good understanding of deaf, but I never did an experiment like this. And thinking back, if I would have done this, I think it would have helped me understand my grandmother more. Or you could wear a blindfold to see what it was like to be blind. Can you imagine doing that as an experiment for a whole day? You want to do it? Any volunteers to do it tomorrow or the rest of this week? If you were to do a bold experiment like that, I think you would discover new insights into what it's like to be blind. And also, when you took off your blindfold, I'm sure you would have a deeper appreciation for your own sight. But there are other less dramatic ways to put yourself in someone else's shoes. One is to play the what-if game. This is when you use your imagination in order to seriously ponder the ramifications of what-if. So let's try a few. I'll ask you to pull out your imaginations and consider with me. What if you were the one who was diagnosed with cancer? Seriously pondering this question could help you think of ways to respond to people who face a terminal illness. What if your face was burned off in a fire? Would you want people to see past the scars and the ugliness and realize that you were still the same person inside? What if you become bedridden? How would you want your friends and family and others to respond, to relate to you? What if you have a child with Down syndrome? Or what if, like Nick Vujicic, you were born without any arms or legs? Despite his physical limitations, Nick has reached tens of thousands of people around the world with his positive Christian outlook on life. I want to show you a short glimpse of his testimony. At one point in his life, Nick prayed to God and asked God to give him arms and legs. He asked God for a miracle. And I want you to listen to what his response was when he did not receive the miracle that he asked God for. Nick's attitude toward his own disability has given him the freedom to be a blessing to just about everyone he meets.
For those of you who don't know me, my name is Nick Vujicic, and basically the Lord has opened up a door for me to share the gospel of a message of Jesus Christ and the hope that we can have, and just to be an example that we can live a life as more than conquerors. That no matter what circumstance come our way, that God's grace is sufficient and He has a purpose for your life. I'm real. I don't have my legs inside the table and my hands behind my back. Many people think it's camera tricks, so I do a jump just to prove you, right? I'm real. You know, many people, when they see me for the first time, they see a guy without arms and legs. And you might have thought, you know, oh, poor guy. Maybe the first time you saw me, yeah, you feel sorry for me. Yes, you do. Do you feel sorry for me now? No. Why? It's nothing to feel sorry about. Really, when it comes down to the fact that we understand that man looks on the outside, but God looks on the inside. It's the inside that counts. If you're praying for a miracle, if God doesn't give you the miracle, you will be the miracle for somebody else. If I am here to tell just one more soul about Jesus, that they may spend eternity with God, no matter what God puts me through here on this earth, I know that I still can be used.
God never makes a mistake, though.
For those of you who do not know Nick's story or have kept up with it, he is now married and he even has a son of his own who has all of his own arms and legs. I've asked you to consider a few instances of what if, but probably you won't have to face any of these particular things. But just maybe you'll have to face something else. And even if you aren't personally affected by a physical or mental disablement, you will come into contact with people who are. Maybe one of your close friends or even a family member will be in a car accident and be permanently disabled. And even if you aren't personally affected by one of these things, you can have a tremendous impact on those who are, just by the way that you relate to them. But if you are like me, it is hard to know how to respond to or relate to people in a lot of circumstances. Often we fear things that are different because we don't understand them. But if we can just overcome our fears enough to reach out to someone, then we can understand them. And understanding then has a surprising way of removing our fears. I'm so thankful for experiences that I've had in my life that have helped me overcome my fears and come to a better understanding of those around me. A number of years ago, I built a house, a new home for a man who is confined to a wheelchair. 95% of the time, he can get out and walk a little bit. He has a back injury, If he has something to hang on to, he can walk short distance. And I've always been just a little bit uncomfortable around people in wheelchairs, especially right at first with someone you don't know. It's hard to know what to say or do. You don't know what their circumstances are. But once again, use your imagination. Put yourself in that chair and don't let yourself get out. Imagine what your life would be like. It's easy to walk past people like that and glance out of the corner of our eye. You know, we don't want to be called staring. But can you imagine being in a chair and having most people treat you that way? Walking by with a quick glance, but not wanting to engage with you. In the short time that I worked with John, it did help me see a tiny bit of the frustrations of being confined to a chair. So my goal in building this home for him was to try to do everything that I could to anticipate his needs, not only right now, but also in the future. And I learned that being in a chair encompasses a lot more things than just making sure that all your doorways are 36 inches wide. Until you live it or are closely involved with someone who is, I don't think we can begin to imagine what an impact it has on almost everything you do. For example, as we were working on his house one day, they were calling for 90 to 100% chance of rain the next day. So I told John, hey, this will be a perfect time for us to go to town. We need to meet at the lumber yard and make some selections and take care of some business. Because what else is a rainy day good for than going to town? You can't work on the job site. It's a perfect thing to do. Well, it wasn't until the next day when I was driving in the expressway through the pouring rain that I realized how wet poor John was going to get in the 5 minutes it takes him to get out of his truck and go back and unload his chair and get in it and close up his truck. The poor man was going to drown. So I started thinking, and I thought, okay, well, we can go around the back. There's a big overhang back there. He can drive back there and get out of the rain. So I called him, told him where to go, and I was feeling a little better about myself until we got unloaded and realized that 6-inch step into the building, he had to go the whole way around the front to find the wheelchair ramp, so he still got wet. So what we are used to taking for granted, something as simple as going shopping in the rain, becomes a completely different challenge for someone who is confined to a wheelchair. My own brother Mike is learning this right now. 2 months ago, he was up in a pecan tree in his backyard trying to cut a limb out and fell about 15 feet, broke his right elbow and his right ankle. So he's been confined to a chair for the last 2 months. I haven't spoken with him personally about this, but I'm sure that he's gained new insights into what that means. He's looking forward to getting a walking cast next week, I believe. Bryant Miller, he and his family live in Athens, Tennessee. He just turned 19 years old this summer and completed high school. But he's been confined to a chair most of his life. There's a lot of young people here. Probably not that young, but consider what life would be like as a young person to always be confined to a chair. I was talking with his mother once, and she told me how Bryant enjoys it so much when someone just takes the time to stop and carry on a conversation with him. Sometimes it's a little difficult to understand Bryant. He has a speech impediment. But if you take the time to listen and to ask questions, you find out that he has many of the same interests that you do. You would also discover that he feels trapped in his own body because he can't do many of the things that he would like to do. So I thank God often for the curveball he threw at us 7 years ago with Wade, and I can only wish that each of you would have a Wade in your life, because he has expanded my horizons and brought blessings into my life that I could have never imagined. He has caused me to look at people around me in an entirely different light. While we were singing, I had to think of another way that Wade has impacted my thinking. Wade loves to sing, and he loves to sing heartily. And if you ever visit our church, you will be able to hear him singing, probably above everybody else. The only problem is he sings to different music than everybody else. And frankly, I do get a little embarrassed at times, especially if there are visitors at church that don't know Wade, and all they see is this little boy sitting at the end of his pew singing his very loudly and vigorously off key. But one day, I was listening to Keith Lancaster, and he was talking about how God made each of our voices unique. Just like we all have unique fingerprints, our voices are also unique. And he was brought out the fact how God created each of our voices and how he takes delight in hearing our voices. And so now, when I hear Wade singing loudly in his unique voice, I take pleasure in realizing how much God is enjoying hearing this little boy that he created. And while I can usually harmonize with my voice better than Wade can, perhaps at the same time I'm looking around critically at others, perhaps I'm singing without thinking about what I'm singing, and I have to wonder whose voice brings the most pleasure to God. My own on-key voice with a less than desirous attitude, or this little boy's off-key voice who is enthusiastically singing his heart out. And I feel ashamed when I think of some of the thoughts and comments that I've had about other people's voices or singing ability. Karen and I have been blessed over the last number of years with the opportunity to take Wade and give a presentation to nearly 200 first-year medical students at Georgia Regents University. And Karen does a wonderful job of sharing with the students and showing them the real life side of Down syndrome as opposed to just the technical knowledge that they are learning in med school. I'm going to show you a part of her presentation that includes a slideshow of people with Down syndrome along with comments that their parents or friends have made about them. These statements demonstrate how something like a diagnosis of Down syndrome, which most people would dread or think is so awful or think that they couldn't possibly handle, which is all feelings that I had, in reality turns out to be the exact opposite. It changes your outlook on life in a very positive way, and it proves to enrich the lives of yourself and those people around you. And even though these slides feature people with Down syndrome, the comments that are made about them could just as easily have been said about many others, anyone with a disability. But before I show you that, I want to introduce you to Ricardo. Ricardo is an amazingly talented young man who just happens to have Down syndrome. He is fluent in both Spanish and English. He plays multiple musical instruments. The one he plays the most is the cuatro, a 10-string Puerto Rican guitar. It's amazing to me that not very many years passed that parents were still being told by doctors to take their child with Down syndrome and place him in an institution because he would never amount to anything. Here's a young man who is touring the world, speaking multiple languages and playing instruments professionally. Karen and I were fortunate to meet him and get to hear him play a few years ago. So the music you are about to hear is Ricardo playing his cuatro. Watch and listen. Thank you. Perhaps some of you are acquainted with the Jeff Lee family from Macon, Mississippi. Their daughter, Diane, has been handicapped since birth. She also is confined to a chair and totally dependent on the care of others. I'd like to share a story with you that Galen Schrock told me about a time when their youth group from their church was on a chorus tour. One of their stops was at a church in Oklahoma, and there was a young girl there that had spina bifida who was confined to a chair. And as they were there that afternoon, these young people from Mississippi took this girl and played with her, pushed her around in her chair, talked and joked with her, and just included her as if she was one of them. And this came normal to them because they had experienced life with Diane. In fact, it was so normal to them to interact that way with someone who was disabled that they had no idea of the impact that they left on that girl and her family. After they returned home to Mississippi, they received a card and a letter from the girl's parents expressing how impressed they were with these young people and the attitude that they had shown their daughter. They said that most people just ignored their daughter, pretended that she wasn't there, and how unusual it was to see young people that were willing to take an interest in her. Because of Diane, these young people have learned to treat others with compassion and a love that sees past the disabilities on the outside to the real person inside. Where does it come from, this wonderful gift of compassion? Remember the Good Samaritan? What did he have that caused him to care enough to act when the others did not? How did he get to be that way? I can imagine that deep within him were qualities that each of us can develop. The first is empathy. And that's a little bit what I've been talking about, the imaginative projection of one's own consciousness into another being. When the Samaritan saw the bandit's victim lying there, he didn't merely observe him, he identified with him. What if I were in that place? What would I want someone to do? The second thing that he had was courage. And he needed it because it does take courage to care and to translate caring into action. The ones who passed by on the other side were afraid of anything strange or challenging, afraid to get involved, afraid the robbers might come back. But the Samaritan had the courage to push those fears aside and to act. So overcome your fear of doing or saying the wrong thing. Overcome your fear of rejection. I guarantee you will be blessed for doing so. The third thing that I'm sure that he had was the habit of helping. Going to the aid of that man on the Jericho Road, I'm sure, was not an isolated incident in his life. He did what he did because that's the kind of man he was. And he probably didn't get that way overnight. How did he get that way? Well, in the same way that you and I can do it. Not so much by drastic self-discipline or heroic sacrifice, but by the endless repetition of small efforts, of helping others, of showing kindness to others. I'm sure you've noticed that I have focused mainly on people who have physical or mental disablements. My wife presented two workshops here this week on disabilities and inclusion in the classroom. Because of Wade, this is our special area of interest. But please know this, in this area of showing compassion, there are way more opportunities than what I have presented. We need compassion for all people, whether it's people of a different race, people in a different socioeconomic status, people in the gay and lesbian community. Everyone we meet is deserving of our compassion. Is there a certain type or group of people that you tend to ignore? That's probably where you need to make a conscious effort to do better in. These are the types of people that Jesus sought out. He pursued them, and we should too. So this afternoon, I'm going to ask you to get out of your comfort zone, overcome your fear, use your imagination to place yourself in another's shoes. Reach out to the unlovely, the disabled, the ones who are different, the ones who have a life-altering physical or mental condition. Because who knows? Life may throw a curve at you, and you may find yourself in one of these groups. In closing, I could wish for each of you many friends, much love, and great happiness. But instead, I want to wish for you the simple gifts of imagination and compassion and the opportunity to use those gifts every day. And in the end, you will find that you have gained friends from every walk of life, love above all comprehension, and a deep happiness beyond compare. And the knowledge you gain from using your imagination will help you to discover that really those who are different from you may not be as different as you think. May God bless you each abundantly as you share His love with your students and with those that you meet.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.